Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, it turned out to be another week of female voices on stages in the city. Again, without any prior knowledge or, shall we say, conscious intention, I caught three new plays, and all came from women playwrights. One, the only one of the three that's on Broadway, I'll be discussing next week. It's written by Bess Wohl, a highly prolific and rather controversial playwright. The two I am discussing are off-Broadway. While neither is what one might call groundbreaking, they are unique stories. The first, playing at 59 East 59, would not necessarily seem to be female-oriented, starting with the title, How to Load a Musket. But this ambitious play in a very small venue comes from the actress and playwright Taleen Monahan. Now, it features seven very good actors portraying Revolutionary and Civil War reenactors, of which there are thousands in this country. There are a lot of ideas here, too many, I think. Dare I say it's overloaded? And I can't help but believe that there is a much better play about why people choose to immerse themselves in battles, or as they call them here, skirmishes of another time. There's this yearning to go back when America was just an idea, says one character. The play does make some very good points, starting with how foreign students seem to know more about American history than our own students, and that the issue of rewriting history by taking down monuments is a complicated one. There is also a lecture at the end about what really qualifies as genocide. Well, that one felt extraneous and unnecessary. The conceit of How to Load a Musket is similar to a play that I reviewed in Los Angeles called Never Is Now. In that one, a group of actors are reading the real words of Holocaust survivors, but break off periodically to compare the past to the present. Well, similarly, this one is about a playwright using the idea of reenactment and the words spoken to her via interviews with actual reenactors to bring up comparisons to emotions and issues today. How to Load a Musket is probably worth your time if you're a serious history nut. I am, but I also found it ultimately tiresome, and I noted a few people nodding off. There's a better play here trying to get out, maybe simplified, with more character development, to not only grab us, which this does initially, but hold us for the duration. And then there is Miss America's Ugly Daughter, subtitled Bess Meyerson and Me. Now, diehard New Yorkers will likely recall Meyerson, the first Jewish woman to be crowned Miss America, and later an active citizen in Jewish causes as well as civic posts. She was no stranger to controversy, particularly when it came to the men in her life. This 90-minute piece, which is playing at the West Side YMCA stage called the Marjorie S. Dean Little Theater, is written by and stars Bess Meyerson's real-life daughter, Bera Grant. Now, Grant has enjoyed a rather successful career as a writer for TV and film, and she started out as an actress in, as she is the first to tell us, rather forgettable films. She cleverly takes us through her own life with the constant interruptions from her mother, who we hear but we do not see, and who calls at all hours of the night and early morning. Meyerson's voice is portrayed by Anna Holbrook. Now, is this another Mommy Dearest story? Another privileged white woman whining? In certain ways, yes. Though there are no coat hangers in which to punish a needy daughter. But there was certainly verbal debasement leading to Bara feeling unattractive. I, on the other hand, was a schlub, she says early on. And at its worst, she felt unloved. There are cliches here, Jewishisms we've heard before. The half-Irish wedding where the Jews wonder where the food is. But there's also some nice, fresh humor and a touching, life-saving love story, and yes, a family secret that leads to necessary forgiveness. What I appreciated most, perhaps because I did not grow up here, was the history surrounding Bess Meyerson's life and times. Jewish girls did not enter beauty contests, she was always told. This was clearly a complicated as well as a stunning woman for whom aging was a harrowing adventure, and who managed to make impact in the media and the city, and yes, the tabloids. Miss America's Ugly Daughter had a nice run in Los Angeles, and it should pick up steam here as well, since that Miss America was so familiar a figure in New York. It's been a rather busy season for one-woman shows, by the way. Another called My Name is Lucy Barton, starring Laura Linney, has just opened on Broadway, which I hope to catch this week. These tend to come in various forms, of course. In Lucy Barton, Linney portrays that character, but also her mother and some of the characters and stories her mother recalls. More of the memoir variety, like Barbara Grant's was Accidentally Brave, in which the writer and actress Maddie Corman told the true tale of finding out that her husband had a shady secret. Recently, I reported on Judy Gold's 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother, also a memoir, albeit more of the stand-up comedy ilk. And then, of course, there was Heidi Schreck's original take, What the Constitution Means to Me. That was a Tony-nominated on-Broadway success, now playing in Los Angeles, which managed to give us all an important and entertaining reminder of that document so much in today's news, through the lens of a woman recalling her days as a young debate student. Now, speaking of women's voices, a play from 1980, one that apparently made a splash for dealing with a house filled with lesbians, is returning to New York. A revived production of Last Summer at Bluefish Cove, written by Jane Chambers, was announced this week to be directed by Cynthia Nixon, produced by folks like Ellen DeGeneres and Lily Tomlin. The casting has not yet been announced, nor the theater, but it will be interesting how this one plays in 2020, whether it will turn out to be the female version of The Inheritance. So, women's voices all over New York stages right now, many in the form of song as well. There is Tina, as in Tina Turner, Jagged Little Pill, as in Alanis Morissette, Hadestown, which is a work of Anais Mitchell, and still to come, Jill, a new show starting rehearsals today called Diana, yes, of royalty fame, and Mrs. Doubtfire, though I guess that one may not qualify.
Hard to tell.
Mrs. Doubtfire, it's... sounds like it's about a woman, but we know who.
No, of course, but I just, again, are we going to be allowed to have Mrs. Doubtfire, or is that going to be canceled? And I'm only being mildly facetious. It's been a weekend where I am starting to hear things that are so silly and so insular and so filtered that it makes me wonder what these people are going, how they're going to explain themselves in 5 years or 8 years.
You know, I agree with you. I think about that all the time. I was reading today about a new play, Timon, I think that's what it's called. It's a Shakespearean play where the main character is now a woman instead of a man. More power to them, and let's see. But I keep thinking to myself, what would my father think if he was still alive? You know, I don't know. We'll see how all this ends up playing. I mean, it's wonderful that there's so many.
It's funny because what happens is, I think that there is an active encouragement to lose the forest for the trees. And the fact is, there are some very talented, all sorts of types of people.
Yeah.
And the idea, I would posit, is that the very talented, all sorts of people should get a shot as best they can with, you know, sure, a little bit of balance, but not limited simply to either gender or race. It's becoming a caricature of itself. The very complaint is now turning into the situation. It's like, I'm sorry, you're excluded because I can't even say what I heard without being offensive, but a very well-known person in the food business was told that they absolutely couldn't do a certain type of book because of their gender.
Oh, I see. I thought you were going to say they couldn't serve a certain kind of dish.
Okay. Well, it's a hop, skip, and a jump to that. It's I mean, if you have 40 years of context and you know what the bleep you're talking about, don't you think that you should that by virtue of your investment of time, energy, etc., and creativity, you should be permitted? Quote, yeah. You'll be crucified on social media. Really?
Yeah.
So I know that this is an ongoing condition, basically, and I'm not impressed, is the way that I'm going to put it. It is inefficient in the general scheme of things because, and none of this speaks to, I can make this benign, non-political. Yeah. There are people who have celiac disease. There are people who absolutely cannot eat gluten. Got it. Nor should they, because they have a physical reaction. That doesn't mean that gluten-free needs to be such a thing for everybody. It's for people whose bodies can't tolerate gluten. I don't know why that's such a hard concept.
I know. Personally, I'm a glutton for gluten, but that's my next book. Anyway, I know these are interesting times, and the play I'll discuss next week, which I saw last night, is an interesting one, which deals with some of these issues as well. But I'll talk about it then. But I did leave feeling, won't it be nice when we can just have gay actors playing gay people without it being the subject of everything? I'm very optimistic that we're getting to that point without going crazily over a line somewhere. But I hope we're getting to the point that we're all people. We can all play all kinds of roles as written, as they were intended to be played. So, to be continued. And a happy Martin Luther King Day. Fortunately, they haven't changed that one yet.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.